If one of the major objectives of the government of British Columbia is to reduce the number of cars on the road, why is it that that same government is so reluctant to introduce ride-sharing? Let's take, for example, the idea of 30 trips in one ride-sharing vehicle. Well, that could take anywhere from 20 to 25 vehicles off the road. Now, multiply that by hundreds of ride-sharing vehicles, and the number of cars absent on the motorways becomes significant. Significant enough to make a dent in carbon emissions from automobiles. According to Ian Tostenson of Rideshare Now, what's behind this is unbelievable politics that rest in the heart of Surrey, because that's primarily where the influence of the taxi industry is, and both parties, both the NDP and the Liberals, have been very concerned, especially since the last election where the NDP picked up some seats in Surrey. They don't want to annoy those voters. Recently, the provincial government did relent to introducing a ride-sharing program with caveats that proponents of the system say will slow down the implementation and severely restrict the number of drivers offering the service. We invited Ian Tostenson of Rideshare Now to join us for a conversation that matters about the myriad and confusing reasons why British Columbia is dragging its feet and standing in the way of ride-sharing.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Centre for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Ian, welcome.
Thanks, Sue.
We're living in kind of an interesting time in British Columbia in the sense that we don't have ride sharing.
Right.
We don't have Uber. We don't have Lyft. And there's a lot of people who are asking for it. They believe that it's a vital service. They're confused as to why we don't have it. From your perspective in the food and beverage industry, why is it important that ride hailing or ride sharing be an available service?
Certainly from a food and beverage perspective in British Columbia, just as some context, there's about 180,000 employees in the industry. And So it's a massive industry. It's very highly concentrated, obviously, in Metro Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
One thing behind that, though, is that we have a massive labor shortage underway right now, particularly in our kitchens. And so what we know that if we can expand transportation links for people that can travel to and from their jobs easier, then we can make available a wider pool of workers for our industry. So that's number one.
And it's not a consideration that I thought of. I thought that you were thinking about the safety for
right.
Customers who might want to enjoy a beverage.
Well, yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Yeah.
But this sort of popped up on us about a year and a half ago because people said we can't get anyone to work in our kitchens. We sort of thought, well, boy. So what happened was one of the SkyTrain lines opened out to Coquitlam, and there was a Tim Hortons there, and they were saying, we can't get anyone to work in our kitchen. And once the SkyTrain came in, the line came in, expanded the ability for them to access employees all throughout the Metro Vancouver region.
Mm-hmm.
We were already into the discussion about ride sharing at that point because we were. We were talking about customer safety, employee safety, certainly client customer convenience that you'll be able to get. I live in the North Shore. You don't even think about coming downtown on the weekends to go to a restaurant because you'll never probably ever get back.
Right, because the cabs don't necessarily want to go over to the North Shore because they're going to have to deadhead back.
That's the big thing you know, for your listeners to understand is that this whole deadheading thing is an important issue. So once they pick up in North Vancouver, they can't pick up in Vancouver, go back to North Vancouver. And then you put on things like Mother's Day and Christmas and New Year's, and then it just becomes a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding the fact that we've legalized marijuana in Canada, and we haven't even thought about the safety in the roads.
Mm-hmm.
So if you came from Mars, you'd say, you know what, it's logical to provide an enhanced transportation system that would link to all the different transportation nodes that we have right now in the Lower Mainland, and you'd get it done quickly.
Well, I think if we add in the fact that there's a growing number of younger people who say, well, I don't want to buy a car, I don't want to even get a driver's license, but I do want to have access to on-demand transportation. And transit does a great job in what it does.
Yeah.
But once you move out of those transit corridors, getting around isn't so easy.
They call it the first mile, last mile. So the first mile is in theory, how do you get to your mode of transportation? So say you want to get to SkyTrain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got to get there at some point. And then the last mile is how do you get home? So Recently, you know, SkyTrain made an announcement about trying to expand some bus service and enhance the service during the weekends. But it still leaves people standing on the platform to get to their homes. And that's where ride sharing, you know, with Lyft and Uber comes in. And it picks up those little, and it connects everything. So in theory, you could plan your whole trip. Right now with a taxi cab, you can't plan anything because you don't know.
Right.
And it's not a put down in the taxi industry, but they are, there's a finite number of cabs that the government has handed out the licenses. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, you could say, you know what, in 10 minutes, we're going to leave our house. We're going to go to the SkyTrain. We're going to go from here to New Westminster. We're going to get a ride share from here. We're going to go to there. We can get a bike and we could do all these sorts of things once you allow that connection to happen.
Well, because in other cities, Uber offers not just ride sharing, but they also offer bicycle sharing as well. Now, we do have bicycle sharing here, but it's all tracked on one app, and you would get to be able to stay within that.
Totally.
That
I mean, you could plan your whole trip to Victoria, round trip to Victoria, including the ferries, because you have so much certainty now with respect to the transportation system. But, you know, British Columbia, we've been dealing with this for 8 years.
Yeah.
The Liberals, they studied it. And
they didn't do anything about it either.
They did nothing about it.
Yeah.
We are getting close to some announcement. I'll explain that in a few minutes. But what's behind this is unbelievable politics at rest in the heart of Surrey, in the Indo-Canadian population, and because that's primarily where the influence of the taxi industry is. It's a fact, and it is what it is. And both the parties have been very concerned, especially since the last election, where the NDP picked up some seats in Surrey. They're very sensitive about causing waves in the South Asian community in Surrey.
Yeah, it's important political jurisdiction. So it can help swing an election one way or the other.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, you pay attention to what those constituents want. I think that it's we want to be careful not to say that this is like a cultural thing. It just so happens that people from that community have migrated towards the taxi industry and play a dominant role.
Well, if you look at, and again, facts, and it's just, but if you look at the ownership of taxi licenses in Metro Vancouver, there's 104 cab companies that own all the licenses. And primarily, they're all residents in Surrey. And that's fine. I mean, it's not a big issue. But my point with this whole situation has been the last couple of years is, why can't we just sort of find our own territory here for ride sharing and a taxi industry? And kind of move on and get everybody on the same page. But the taxi industry has been really difficult to work for. They say, let's create a level playing field and make it level like what our playing field is. And they are having a hard time embracing the sort of technology advancements that's happened with ride sharing.
I've got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show.
Well, that's interesting coming from your perspective, of course, because you're a food and beverage industry.
Yeah.
You need to rely on that taxi service to provide for your customers and also, as you pointed out, for staff, because if they can't get to and from the job, well, then, and customers can't get to and from the restaurant safely, then we're creating a problem that has impacts with everyone.
Well, you're right. And of course, the liability for anybody that serves alcohol is a major one. And the ability to take one of your patrons and say, you know what, I've paid for a ride that's going to take you to your house is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, those kinds of things. We were in Nashville recently, and in the entertainment part of Nashville, they have all these little hubs. They have a Lyft hub, they have an Uber hub, they have a taxi hub, and people know where to go. And so there's thousands of people in the Nashville entertainment district at any point in time at nighttime. But they move them out of there really quickly because there's all these different avenues to move people.
Now, you know as well as I do that there are people who are going to say, well, hang on a second. You know, driving for Uber isn't a job, it's a gig. And then you're promoting that gig economy. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
I'm sure that you've looked at this.
Yeah, so the way the stats roll out is that in most cases, so if they look at Lyft, and both Lyft and Uber are in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Lyft is not in Alberta for reasons we can talk about in a bit, but the average person drives less than 18 hours a week. People scream and say they're not making any wages and stuff. Well, they're independent contractors, but on average, they make about $18 an hour. And so if you've been taking an Uber or Lyft, you'll see that you get retired people, you get, single moms, you get students, and they just go in and they just turn the meter on, and they just drive for 5 or 6 hours and make some extra money, and away they go. So in a province that continuously talks about affordability, to me, if I was the premier, I'd say this was a great way for people to make some extra money.
Well, and that is one of the elements that these ride-sharing companies promote. And they point out that anybody can be an Uber or a Lyft driver.
Well, this is the big controversy right now in British Columbia. So there's the Passenger Transportation Board is now in control of this whole thing. And they are having meetings they've had meetings the last couple of weeks to determine several things. So number one is, should they put a cap on the number of licenses they hand out to these ride-sharing companies? And if you do that, you're creating the taxi industry again. So the answer to that is hopefully not.
Right.
Should we cap the number of drivers? Answer to that is, let it be supply and demand driven by the consumer. And then there's the, what are you going to charge?
Yep.
Again, the Competition Bureau of Canada claims or says that should be determined by the customer. You shouldn't get involved with the provincial government.
Yeah.
The fourth one is the big contentious issue right now, and this is over licensing, whether a Class 5 or Class 4. Most people that we know has a Class 5 driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And the minister came out, and before anybody said anything, and is insisting on a Class 4. Insisting that a Class 4 commercial driver's license is safer than a Class 5.
Mm-hmm.
And even despite the fact that ICBC came out, their own stats shows very little difference between Class 4 and 5 safety. What this is a way to slow down the process. Because if you require everybody now to get a Class 4 license, you have to get another learner's license. Then you have to write... you need to write an exam, get a learner's license, then you have to take another road test, a commercial road test, and they've, as the guy from Uber said, basically it deals with how to drive a bus is what you really learn. And you learn about a safety inspection around the car. We suggested to the minister, and she's a lovely person, that BC has an opportunity to create a Class 5 Plus. So let's just take the Class 5 and add something to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lyft and Uber do criminal checks. They do driver abstract tests.
As the customer can check out before you even get in the car.
Well, that's right. You go to your app and you go, there's Stu. Yeah. I can see a picture of Stu. I can see what your rating is. You can see Ian and what my rating is, and we decide to do business together.
Mm-hmm.
And at any point in time, Uber or Lyft knows exactly where I am if I'm in your car.
Yeah.
But the government doesn't seem to want to embrace that talk around safety, so they're saying, well, Class 4 is better, which it's not. So we're a little bit concerned because we've got to populate. So let's say it really happens in September. They take applications from the ride-sharing companies, Lyft and Uber, to become... licensed in BC, and then we say, great, we need drivers. Well, now you better run out and get your Class 4 license.
Well, how many people are going to do that?
I phoned ICBC and said, I want to get a Class 4 license. And they said, okay, great. Well, it's 3 or 4 weeks down the road. I said, well, I need about 500 of my buddies. They want to do the same thing. They want to drive for rideshare. And she basically said, we can't accommodate that, and end the conversation. So my question to the minister has been, is ICBC ready to handle the onslaught, because we need thousands of drivers,
right?
Not just 10 or 800. We need thousands of drivers. And at this point, we think what we predict is going to happen is either the government's going to modify this demand on Class 4, or they're going to have to make some adjustments at ICBC to accommodate all the people that presumably want to get their Class 4. But you're right, Stu, it's going to leave a lot of people out. It's going to leave students out. Now, 53% of the people that write the exam fail.
Yeah.
So they say that the best way to approach it is to take a commercial driving course. That's 3 or 4 days and $500.
So now you've got cost. So you're making an investment into what is a part-time job.
That's right. The government goes, well, we want it so bad enough, go make an investment. But there's not a lot of people. Now, the target who drive for Lyft and Uber are students, single moms. Now, here's an interesting stat. Lyft does not operate in Alberta because Alberta has a class 4 license requirement.
So they just didn't bother.
They said we didn't want to do it.
So Lyft, right away, we may be eliminating Lyft from British Columbia
possibly,
because of this
possibly.
Consideration.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at it really hard. Because if you turn on your app and go, Lyft is now available in British Columbia, you know, any drivers, people would go, well, that wasn't worth it. There's a lot of people in BC that don't even know what ride sharing is yet. So they hear all this stuff and they go, oh yeah, we should have class 4 and it'll just happen overnight. It won't. The number of women drivers in Alberta is 100. And it's about 10% of all the drivers in Alberta, where typical markets, women make up about 48% of the drivers for ride sharing. So it's because of the requirement for class 4, they don't have the time or and effort, you know, they haven't got the time to put into it and or the money to get that class 4. So it is an inhibitor.
So as you're talking about this, is it safer for a driver in a ride sharing program for a female driver to be in that car driving a male customer in a ride share program or as a taxi?
Well, it's interesting because I've never seen a woman taxi driver ever in Vancouver.
Well, I have, but not many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because of the built-in safety mechanisms within the technology of ride sharing, I would say that that driver would be safer driving for a ride sharing company than a taxi.
Well, because all the data about who that customer is been entered into the ride-sharing company's system, and they know exactly where you are and where that person is, their history, and you're rating one another as you go all along.
That's right. That's right.
And so when I think about those kinds of considerations versus a taxi, well, yeah, the name is up there on the visor or on the back between the driver and the passenger. But how am I supposed to remember that? You know, do I now have to take up my phone and take a picture of it? I don't remember what cab number was.
Yeah.
There's the convenience also of I just get out of the car and I go. Yep. It's paid for.
Paid for? There's absolutely cashless transactions. It's done on your credit card, yeah.
So a cab has to stop, and frequently, and they have the right to stop in a lane in a busy downtown area to let their fare out and stay there while the payment is completed, holding up traffic.
Yep.
So another consideration around ride sharing that I think is quite interesting is when you talk to the ride sharing companies, they go, we're not in competition with the taxi business. That's not who we actually want to help people get off the road. And is that not contributing towards a reduction in the number of vehicles on the road and towards a climate policy that so many governments want to embrace? And yet here in British Columbia, we're dragging our feet about that. I think, okay, this is a great thing. Now, to Andrew Weaver's credit, he's saying, look, no, I want this, and for that very reason.
Well, absolutely. So this is the most interesting issue I think I've ever faced in my entire career. And I got involved in it as a spokesperson for Ride Sharing Now because we have a big group of businesses and I stepped up and now I became the voice of this. But as soon as you say things like, this is going to get cars off the road, someone will phone up in the talk show and say, no, it's going to increase congestion. And now you're into the conversation. So someone says it's a part-time job, people make $18 an hour. People phone up and say, no, they're making $4 an hour, they're getting abused as drivers for Uber. Like, it's like black and white. It's not. There's nothing in the middle. There's no one going, hey, this would be really awesome. How do we make it work? So you're right. I think what happens, it depends where you are.
Yeah.
They believe as a market like Vancouver, it'll actually reduce congestion. People will get rid of their second cars. They'll have better access to the pretty good systems we have right now, like with SkyTrain. I mean, I certainly would in the North Shore. I would dump a car tomorrow if I had rideshare. I'd use it all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe I drive a little bit when I'm coming to town. I'll pick up somebody. And so I think and the net effect is, I think Andrew Weaver is right, you get a decrease in congestion.
Yeah.
For
fewer cars on the road. You meet a whole bunch of your climate objectives. It works very well.
Well, not a lot of people in sort of coming up. My sons don't own, well, one does, but the other one doesn't own a car and probably doesn't ever care to because they just have other modes of transportation. They don't want the parking problems. They don't want the insurance problems, and et cetera. So
you touched on insurance, and that brings up an interesting point. A taxi, like to their credit, pays extra insurance. Mm-hmm. Like they are covered for an increased amount of liability should something happen while there's a passenger in the car.
Yeah.
What's the situation when it comes to ride sharing?
So what it looks like they're going to do is, and taxis, you know, I had a taxi guy that he goes, I know you. Oh, I'm not going to be able to get home now. But he said, let me show you something. He pulled out his insurance. He pays $2,000 a month. And he actually owned the cab. And, he goes, imagine that. But what we talked about is that cab goes 24 hours a day.
Yes.
That's the way his business model has to work. And believe me, those guys work hard. I mean, if anybody doesn't think a taxi driver works hard, I have a lot of, you know, a lot of respect for taxi drivers. I really, truly do. And they're just dealing in a system that they have to deal in. It's not like they can be creative too much.
Yes.
What I think ICBC will do with ride sharing is that you will only pay commercial insurance from the time you sign on to the system. So if Stu decides to go out, I'm going to spend a couple hours and I'm going to do some driving tonight for Lyft. As soon as you sign on, ICBC will know and they'll charge you accordingly.
Right.
So you'll be charged by use.
This is something that ICBC will have to supply. Now, in doing a bit of research, I learned that in other jurisdictions, Uber and Lyft, the insurance kicks in when the passenger gets in the vehicle.
That's
because
right,
it's all connected to the app.
That's right.
When the passenger gets out, they're not paying for insurance
that they don't require.
Now, whether or not we're going to have that finite and flexible of a system remains to be seen. But I think it's important from a passenger's perspective, you know that in the event that something did happen, you are
correct.
You're going to be covered by insurance.
Absolutely. And that's right. As soon as you get in the car, you're covered. And as soon as you get out of the car, the insurance goes back to normal. So, yeah, I know. It just seems so common sense, doesn't it?
You think, okay, I want to be able to get into this sharing economy.
Yeah.
Is that not the direction that we're supposed to be moving in? What is it that we're doing here that says, no, I'm going to go kicking and screaming and dragging my feet into the future? Because it really is about a sharing economy.
Andrew Weaver, I think, is a voice of reason on this one, is that if you study transportation, what's ahead of this one, Tesla was now talking about buy a Tesla, you can put it into a pool in time, it'll drive itself, and so when you go to your office in your Tesla, you park your car, you give it permission, it'll go and pick up people driverlessly and drive people around.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got implications on parking lots and all this kind of stuff. It's a massive change. If we can't get ride sharing with people, drivers done, it's taken this long, I worry about British Columbia's approach to technology, disruptive technology.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in and sharing this.
Great, thank you.
Okay.